Good morning. Welcome to this morning's edition of the Richard Urban Show. We're very happy you could join us. We present news and views from the inpatient principal point of view. And we're discussing family strengthening. And we're very happy to have Jack Hefeste on. And recently we had him, if maybe you saw, as the candidate running for the county commission here in Jefferson County. So welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, I'd like to share a short presentation of a few slides talking about this issue of strengthening families and helping the next generation. So this is, the work we do with our nonprofit Urban Life Training. The full name is Urban Life Training and Reality Assessment Team Choice. Okay. So the premise I'd like to discuss is that to break the generational cycle of outside of wedlock birth, we need a revolution of absence-centered education. Parents should present the expectation of sexual abstinence before marriage to their children, regardless of whether or not they abstain themselves. They should think about what is best for their children's future and speak honestly about their own situation. School and community-based programs such as Urban Life Training can back up parents in making this revolution. In one generation, this can break the cycle of outside of wedlock births and all of the related personal and societal consequences. So here we see that in West Virginia, 47% of children in West Virginia are born outside of marriage. So we see that steep increase. The chart starts in 1950. Not really a big change, really, until about this 70. You know, still then it's around 10 or 12%. But now we're at 47%. So, teaching sexual abstinence before marriage is integrally related to creating a safe and healthy environment for our children. All right, so our mission is, at Urban Life Training raises youth leaders to develop good character and to model and teach about the benefits of sexual abstinence in preparation for marriage and successful family formation. We provide directive, abstinence-centered, and health education through our community network of trained parents and community leaders. Urban Life Training chapters carry out the Urban Life Training mission in their local area. So I'd like to share some quotes. This is from The Family Rooted in Absolute Sexual Ethics, which is the model for God's absolute peace and idea of the global kingdom. And this speech was presented by Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Respected leaders from around the world, what do you think is God's ultimate purpose for creating human beings? It is to experience joy through relating with ideal families filled with true love. What does an ideal family look like? When God first created human beings, he made Adam representing all men and Eve representing all women, with the intention that they become owners of true love. Then what was the quickest way for them to cultivate a character of true love? Simply put, it was to secure a parent-child relationship with God, whereby they could live in attendance of God as their father, and form a model family embodying God's ideal of peace. They were to have followed the path of living as one family with God, experiencing joy eternally. God created Adam and Eve and installed them as the first ancestors of humankind to form the model family and establish the ideal of peace. He committed himself completely to raising them as his son and daughter, who were to be encapsulations of the entire cosmos, mediators between the spiritual and physical world, and lords of creation, and who would be joined with him through true love, true life, and true living. Ladies and gentlemen, it was necessary for Adam and Eve to establish a model ideal family of peace. God, the absolute being, created human beings as his children in order to instill in them absolute values on the basis of an absolute standard. Thus, human beings must follow the way of that absolute standard in keeping with the demands of the heavenly path. This means we must follow our destined life course in order to attend God, the Absolute Being, as our parent. In other words, for people to perfect themselves in resemblance of God and obtain the stature of people of character, who can be called sons and daughters of the Absolute Being, they must follow the path based on the absolute standard God has determined. The essence of this path is a standard of absolute sexual purity. The first stage is maintaining absolute sexual purity prior to getting married. After we are born, we go through a process of growth. We pass through infancy and childhood in a very safe and secure environment, embraced in our parents' love and protection. We then enter the time of adolescence, which signals the start of a new and dynamic life as we forge relationships on a totally new level with those around us, as well as with all things of creation. This is a moment when we begin to travel the path to becoming an absolute human being, internally through the perfection of our character and externally by reaching adulthood. Yet, at this time, there's an absolute requirement that people must fulfill no matter who they are. This is a requirement of maintaining their purity, which is a model of absolute sexual morality for human beings. God gave it to his children as their destined responsibility and duty to be carried out in order to fulfill the ideal of creation. This heavenly path is thus the way toward perfecting the model of absoluteness and conjugal love. So this is what we call the success formula in our program, and we do share this with the youth. So to avoid poverty, graduate from high school, get a full-time job, wait until 21 and married before having children. So if you follow all of these points, there's only a 2% chance that you will live in poverty. If you don't follow any of these points, there's a 74% chance that you will live in poverty. So this is something I believe we should be emphasizing and sharing with our children and with young people generally. So I see a two-tiered solution to the problem of family breakdown, which I believe is really the driver of all the different problems in society. First, teach sexual abstinence before marriage and fidelity within marriage to our children. We definitely need to do that. Second, create a movement of marriage as God-centered. UnionStation.love is a matching site where singles who practice sexual abstinence before marriage or who have returned to sexual abstinence before marriage can find a marriage partner. That's a new project we have at Urban Life Training. This is the website here. It is now up and running, so people can join, take a marriage blessing preparation course, and then hopefully find their marriage partner. So it's not a dating site. It's a site for people who want to find a marriage partner. So yeah, that's a few points I wanted to share. I do feel that, you know, we really need to break this cycle. And I think that we need to really teach our youth, you know, abstinence for marriage. I don't see how else we could reduce that curve the opposite way. You have to have a generational change, I think. But I wanted to get your viewpoint on it, your thoughts on it, anything you want to share, or if you have any particular thoughts or statistics or anything. Well, I'd love to, you know, discuss this idea of breaking this cycle and really getting at this problem, which I feel is like the root problem of everything, you know, whether it be crime, drugs, opioids, really poor education outcomes, discipline problems in the classroom, and all of the above. I'll go right ahead.
All right. Well, first of all, I think your precepts are very solid. You didn't put up anything there that I disagree with. I'm pretty lucky because some of your recommendations that you had in there, I performed. Graduated from high school and went to college. I did not get married until I was 26 years old. I held out that long, although I did a lot of dating in high school, particularly in college, and I found the right woman for me, and we were compatible sexually. We shared the same religion. I'm a lifelong Roman Catholic, and she was also lifelong Roman Catholic. So we had a very similar background and basis for religion and morality. I was lucky. I got a pretty good job. I was going to college at the University of Colorado in Boulder, Colorado. During summer break, I landed a very lucrative job with a large company, and it turned out to be a 33-year term of service, so to speak. I mean, I was very lucky to get that job and advance within the company, complete my college education. And it wasn't easy. It didn't guarantee financial security, but I don't know what it would have been like if I didn't have a steady job. My wife also worked in jobs while we were developing our family, and so that worked. It worked pretty well. It all came together. My wife and I were married for 43 years and 8 months, and she passed away. It's been about 4.5 years since she passed away. And the little joke that I have is just we both agreed to quit smoking back in the early 80s. And I was able to quit, and she was not able to quit. She kind of smoked on the sly. She didn't smoke around me or in the home, but it was pretty obvious that she was still smoking, and she died of lung cancer. It's a bad thing. It's like you can preach all you want, but you have to, it starts at home. The same thing with the family. I agree with you. I think the breakdown of morality in the world, particularly in the United States, is the fact that the family unit is not strong like it used to be. When I was growing up, knowing a kid in the neighborhood or playing with someone whose parents were divorced was pretty much a rarity. And now it's almost, it's got to be a pretty high percentage. And if the family breaks down, the structure in the home breaks down, it's really sad. I think there's been a general takeaway from religion in the home. I said, I'm Roman Catholic. Most of the people that I know or myself when I was growing up, we professed our faith, but we didn't do it with banners or signs, or it wasn't a big deal publicly. But if someone asked us, we were always taught to express our faith openly and follow the principles, the Ten Commandments, the laws of God, the laws of the church. And I think it was a pretty good moral basis to continue on. And of course, that went to my daughter. We lost a son back in the he died shortly after birth, and then we waited a period of time, and we did it again and got a daughter. She was also premature, and she's got a very successful career. I have three wonderful grandchildren.
Oh, beautiful.
My daughter did not marry a Catholic, but she married what I would consider to be a moral person. And and the children have all been raised in the Catholic Church. And, you know, done the CCD thing, the Christian.
Right. Yeah, I know Christian about that. Doctrine.
Yeah. And it's a good basis for life, but also the fact that it was practiced at home Yes. The morality was practiced at home was a good thing. So, I mean, I've been very lucky in my life to have fallen in with good people on the right track. I worked for a big company. When I started to work for them, it was Martin Marietta. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they merged with the Lockheed Missiles and Space Company and became what is now known as Lockheed Martin. And they had a pretty high standard for their employees. It was pretty much frowned upon. In fact, for many, many years, you couldn't be a husband and wife and work on the same program. They tried to keep the job separate from the marriage types. And so people I worked with were generally a pretty high moral standing. And when I was in the military, I was lucky I was in the intelligence world. And to get into that classification, you have to have or pass a rather rigorous security clearance, which goes into a lot of your personal background and, you know, stuff that you do or don't do. So I've been very lucky. I know it's not easy for everybody, and I don't look down on anybody who hasn't been able to achieve that on their own life. But I certainly would recommend that mm-hmm. anybody who has children to try to bring them up with some sort of touch and embrace Judeo-Christian values, or some other, at least some sort of standard of morality, and in the long run, it will pay.
Yeah. What about the idea? Agreed. And it, you know, used to be, like you said, maybe until 1970 or whatever. Anyway, not a specific point. You know, it was expected, you know, you didn't have sex outside of marriage. Yes, people did, but, you know, generally, you didn't bear children outside of marriage. Of course, that has radically changed. So what about making it more directive? Like, I've often thought, and I've talked to some people, I've been working in schools, mostly middle and high schools, or specifically our program works in middle and high school level, a little upper elementary, especially in when it was sixth grade, it was still elementary. But what I'm getting at is, how about we make it a standard? Like, why couldn't the band or the choir or even the football team have an expected standard that if you want to, so those are different things, you know, where you would be maybe could be a leader or could be, you know, outstanding. Why not make that part of it, like an expected standard of absence? Or what do you think? Is that not a good idea?
Well, I think it's a good idea. I'm not sure that it's attainable on a widespread scale in today's society. It started actually before the 70s, because I remember in the 60s, Woodstock was actually, I think, 1970.
69, I think, 68.
Was it 69? I just remember the hit songs from the festival that were on the charts in the 1970s, but I also remember in the middle 60s, when I first started to go to college, I heard a lot about this stuff called free love.
Right.
And it was pretty widespread in those days. And yeah. I also remember that having gone to a Catholic high school, and I'll tell you, my high school had the most beautiful girls in the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
We had just absolutely gorgeous, and they were modest and beautiful. And if I could show you pictures from my yearbook, and you would say, wow, was she a beauty queen? And the answer was, yes, she was. We had a Miss Teenage America from our high school back in the 60s. And but anyway, when I went to college, the girls were still beautiful and nice, but I guess I want to say they dressed more provocatively. And if you're a young fellow with raging hormones, it's that's not a rock group, but you could be tempted.
Of course.
And yeah, so, I mean, along with abstinence, I one of the things I've always done in my life is I always have an A plan and a B plan.
Yeah.
So the A plan is how everything should work the way I like it. The B plan is the backup. Uh-huh. And as far as abstinence is concerned,
okay.
The B plan would be, I would certainly advise children today, youngsters, young uh-huh. people under 21, to understand birth control.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, be advised that you could have a few moments of joy that turns into a lasting burden. And worse than that, I think another reason that things are so bad is the easy way out was abortion.
Right.
Which I totally oppose.
Right. So, yeah, on that topic, if I might interject,
sure.
I think there needs to be more focus on this, what we're talking about, and less focus on abortion. Of course, I oppose abortion. I do believe, you know, life begins when you're conceived. But my point is that by focusing so much on the end result, we could probably eliminate, I would guess, let's throw out a figure, 80% of abortion if we followed what I'm talking about. So yeah. I think even the pro-life movement should have a very strong focus. And honestly, I don't see it. I don't hear it. Yes, I do know some pregnancy centers do have an abstinence-related component. Since I'm in that area, I've talked to some of the pregnancy centers, prevention centers, I mean. But the point is, it's not a big component. It should be huge, because shouldn't we be preventing abortions? What do you think?
Well, I agree. Like I say, abstinence is a good, that's a good standard to have. But like I say, the backup plan, the plan B,
yeah. Well,
you educate your children on
right.
birth control
yeah.
methods.
So
and
what,
it's,
yeah.
It's pretty easy for a man to carry a birth control
yeah.
device in their billfold.
Yeah, I'll have to disagree on that one. Why? Because, like, also, I mean, also people, you know, subjectively, like, some of the people I've worked with and know, like, you know, they told me, hey, my parents told me, you know, don't have sex to be married. And it was, they were so clear on it, they didn't. Whereas, you know, their friend, their mom said, don't have sex, but if you do, you know, use a condom. But well, first that, well, and needless to say, or almost needless to say, that person, you know, got pregnant, whatever. But the point being, you know, it doesn't deal with any of the emotional consequence. It doesn't, it fails like whatever, 20, 25% of the time, or with like STDs. We cover all this in our program, like HPV and general herpes. They're super contagious, and you can even just spread them by touching, you know, the general area. You don't even have to have like intercourse. So I would say, as a parent, and what I tell my children, well, now they're grown, have told them, like, our daughter is married, our son's not married, but is that, and we have a couple, two grandchildren, is that don't have sex before you're married. I think it needs to be a singular message. I mean, I do know what you're saying. I do hear that a lot. But I think, you know, this shouldn't be like the scripture being we're sharing. And, you know, we're differing on this, but that's okay. We're discussing it. I don't think there should be a clear focus. Just like, because if you have like two options, that's just my strong opinion. But go ahead, continue on.
Well, like I say, first of all, I really do agree with you. Yeah, I think abstinence is a good first approach. My question to you is, other than it being given from a religious sector, do you think you're going to get any of that or hear any of that? You know, what's the pulpit or what's the venue that you would recommend to get the word out? I'm not sure because it's been a while since I've been to high school. And I had sex education in high school.
Right.
I'm not sure if they're still teaching sex education insofar as preventative.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of a quote unquote expert on that. So I started, in a longer venue, I might share some of this stuff, but I started teaching like sexual health education, abstinence-centered. I would also more like to call character-centered, character and abstinence-centered. In 1997. So, and our program launched as a nonprofit in 2003 in DC in the inner city. I was living on East Capitol Hill. I don't know if you know DC, but we worked at Eastern High School. Most of the kids come from Anacostia, East River. So it's needless to say, the great majority, 75% plus, did not live with both parents, or even 25% or so with any parent. Anyway, the point is the message was well received. The principals and teachers and parents liked it. So what am I getting at? Yeah, I've taught about personally 3,000 students. We've had a couple hundred plus in clubs. So our venue has been like 98% non-religious. Why do I share the scripture? Because I don't think, like, first of all, we don't share scripture in our program. It's secular. But I think I think that is an important value. And I don't think people should be afraid to talk like you were sharing, you know, you share your faith whenever it's appropriate. You know, in the public square, we shouldn't be like, even in our county, like Jennifer Krause put up that we could pray at a meeting, for instance. That's fine. We're not telling people they have to belong to a certain religion. But anyway, the short answer is, like, in the school, no, we don't share scriptures in the school, but we do share about the benefits of abstinence from many angles. Physical, of course, disease, STDs, pregnancy, emotional, social, like we talked about poverty, intellectual, you know, like how, you know, it would benefit you not to be having sex. And what about heartbreak, you know, if you have boyfriends or girlfriends, you do have sex, you break up, which is, of course, happens probably to, you know, 98% of people. How many people marry yes, some people might marry their high school sweetheart or whatever, but in most cases, they'll break up and, you know, have emotional scars. We talk about all that. So, and then, like you were mentioning about what do they teach in sex education? Well, although West Virginia, for instance, says you should teach abstinence, that's all it says. So the teacher could say, yes, you should abstain. Now let's get on with, you know, our condom demonstration, whatever. So usually most schools follow what's generally called comprehensive sex education. They do, which means they don't emphasize abstinence, they mention it. And we teach like pretty much everything in our program. The only thing we don't teach, we do talk about the failure rate of condoms and birth control. We don't demonstrate how to put a condom on a plastic penis or whatever. But everything else is covered. And so it is very teachable in schools. And in fact, like, let me share, if I might, the slide I was going to share on action steps. Here's what I suggest. Become a member of Urban Life Training. And not just because it's our organization. You'll have a lot of, you can support what we're doing, but you'll gain access to all of our character and abstinence-centered education materials. So you talked about, like, one thing I was going to mention earlier is, so say you're a parent, like I'm talking to parents in my neighborhood, and I'm asking like Joe or Jill, whoever it is, are you, you know, teaching your children to be abstinent? And like I was just talking to a parent the other day, and they said, no, I didn't specifically do that. I says, well, don't you think you should? And they weren't really, they weren't really thinking about it. So, I mean, you know, I think a very important point for parents is you have to emphasize this for your children. that that's your expectation, and you can use all of our materials or any of them, and a lot of testimonies, videos, PowerPoints, all kinds of things to talk about why that's a good idea. So, I mean, if you're not even teaching that to your children in ninth grade, 20% of the youth, I think I'll add that slide, they have not had sex. But by senior year, this is nationally, but similar in each state, 60% of the high school students have had a sexual relationship. Me and you as a parent, I think any parent, they don't really want their children having sex in high school. So that's really concerning. So what I'm suggesting is number B is form a chapter of urban life training. What is a chapter? Well, you can use absence-centered materials. You can go in the school. Of course, you'll talk to the principal and they have to approve it. So, but many will. And you teach the materials and you provide it. You work with the teacher or teachers that the principal, you know, directs you to. So, and that takes the load off the teachers, and teachers have enough to do. So we can't really be expecting, although they may teach sex ed in their curriculum, it probably isn't abstinence-centered. And if it is, it could use a boost. So yeah, I suggest teaching an urban life training program, and we have clubs where the youth are interested in this, like staying abstinent. They become peer counselors for the other students, which is really good, like positive peer pressure. And then, another action step, you could become a member of unionstation.love. That is for finding your spouse, but also for married couples, they can take this marriage strengthening course. But especially, again, I think parents should step in and assist their, even their adult children in finding their eternal match. In some cultures, I guess more like in India, that's common. It's not so common in the United States, but why not? What could be more important for your child if you're just setting them loose and you expect them to just find their marriage partner? Yeah, you and I may have found, well, actually, I was matched by Reverend Mrs. Moon with my wife. But you may have found your marriage partner, but we see that more and more young people are struggling with that. And you may know or personally know people, and you know, in some cases, our own children who they're older, they're not married, you know, especially, well, women maybe more, but even men. So it's really an issue. And also, I think before I close out what I'm sharing here, I don't know if this is blocked. Yeah, create more public awareness at your Board of Education. We have like a resolution for character and absence education. You could, I'd like to get that adopted here in Jefferson County. Just saying that, you know, we should teach, I don't know if that's blocked. There we go. We should teach absence-centered materials, and we could teach them. Yeah, I think those are real solid action steps, because I know that, you know, where people are trying to oppose in some areas, they're trying to oppose like things like the pornographic books in for preschoolers, and rightly so. I just did a show on that. But that's like a reaction thing, and it's not a bad thing. We need to oppose that. But what are we going to do to break the cycle? That in itself, you know, I think me, and I've done it, and I'm trying to make it a thing that's broad spread, any community. And actually, I want to start a local urban life chapter with people, so you know people are interested, who would do this. And like, I've approached some schools, and I know at least one of the middle schools told me they're interested. Bring it into the school. Let the youth who want to stay absent have a club. Let them talk to the other students and, you know, make it a cool thing. It is cool.
Well, yeah, that's great, is if you can make it cool. What I would, if I ruled the world, if I was a principal, if I had a big say in Board of Education, I'd insist that students have, that graduating students take a life skills for success class that would touch on those type of situations. You know, how to use an Excel spreadsheet, how to write a check, how to balance a checkbook, you know, basic skills for life that all result in success for living. And I'm not sure that they do that anymore, or if it's mandatory, or if it's just the nerds and the geeks that take those type of classes, but it would be better. And of course, sexual actions or inactions for students
might
be part of that. But if you made it kind of like at a bigger picture and made it something that was that seemed cool, that would be great. But in your instance, without going to school, if you don't have that, the family doesn't have that kind of a structure where you can sit down and talk to your children, educate them, or tie their lives in with the morality that they have seen or witnessed within their own family, the good stuff, you know, birthdays, Christmas, religious holidays, that's all part of the family structure. And if that doesn't exist, I don't know what you go to for a lot of people other than just trying to get them to understand that they need to do, these are the type of things they need to do or not do to have a successful life.
Yeah, I can mention that.
Yeah, I mean, testimonies
that, like,
yeah, it's I mean, like I say, I was very lucky that both of my parents were the same religion and had what I would call a moral background. But I know that that doesn't happen to everybody. So
yeah. So what I'm trying to say is, like, oh, so take, there was this young one lady, for instance, at Duke Ellington School of Arts in D.C. Of course, we worked with many youth, but she was in the club. So, like, she's saying, you know, like, her parents are not married. She lives, you know, East River, where most people are not married. And in fact, right now around here, you know, half the people aren't married. Apparently, that's what it says, or about whatever, you know, a large number of people, let's say. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is, so it's kind of like, oh, hey, Mr. Urban, hey, oh, I'm supposed to abstain. Oh, wow, that's a pretty good idea. You know, I think I do that. That sounds really good. In other words, it's not even out there as something that should be attained. You know, like this young lady, she's living in an environment where no one is married. Her parents aren't married. It's not even on the radar. Shouldn't we at least give this option to our children?
Well, I can't argue that what you're saying is not valid. In fact, I think it is valid. Give people options and let them know that there's other ways to do things, and that some of the ways that are out there today are very, very high risk, and others are very, very low risk when it comes to life values, success values. So what you're doing, I think, is commendable. If you can get it across to schools.
Yeah, I think we need, so over here, like, I know we can get it across because I've been doing it, but what I'd like, I'm trying to find more people to engage. Like, if you know people, send them my way. I'd like them to, like, our training's online. We do live trainings too, but, you know, look at our training, learn the materials, get them, and just, you know, they need a little bit of time, but not a lot. Even once a week, they could go to the school for a couple hours, hook up with a health or English or whatever teacher the principal directs them to. It's not always a health teacher. I've worked with health teachers, English teachers, physics teachers, earth science, you name it. But anyway, then start teaching it, and they're going to like it. The kids will like it. Some of them will opt into a club. So yeah, that's, we need, like, people are willing, like, I mean, I don't know. It's not that, I find it, I'll put it in the first word, not that easy to find volunteers, or even, I mean, we can also, you know, give a stipend, you know, if we have people are willing, I mean, they can volunteer, which is good, but also we can give a small stipend if that helps them. You know, we can also raise money from the community for that. So we need those people. Like, we don't have yet that local chapter where we can say to, like, whichever school, like the ones that talked to, a few of them, they want it. Okay, we have, you know, someone who'll come in, whatever the schedule is, and so on.
I know when I was in high school, there were certain teachers that were also leaders. And if they did something, they were going to get a huge following. A lot of them were sports-oriented teachers, but there were other teachers that taught a variety of subjects. I was not in band or did not play a musical instrument, but I remember Mr. Bowman in our high school was a very strong leader, had a strong moral background. He had service in the community and in the military. And I remember I had a history of music class with him, which is part of the reason I am cursed with a vast knowledge of classical music. But it is he made an impact on me in many, many areas, including the military. He was a veteran, and some of the things he said in the course of the class is broke down my resistance to any sort of future military service. You get leadership and impacts on your life from a variety of places.
Yeah.
In addition to your parents, if you have strong leaders that are teachers, your religious leaders, family, it's a myriad of people.
It can be life-changing.
The way you are. And but I think the service that you're proposing or that you are offering is a good step. So I congratulate you and salute you.
Yeah,
that's
good. Send some people. No, I mean, of course, I'm talking to people in my neighborhood. I'm talking to you about it. I'm talking to other people. But it's not. We don't have yet the volunteers. But I know there are people out there. Maybe just haven't quite pulled it together. But we have a model. We've already been doing it. It's all set up. We have materials. We know it works. So we just need to initiate like locally here, and of course any community, but I'm here, so of course, you know, the like local chapter, and get it going, you know.
Have you approached the different high schools in the area?
I have a little. So I talked to one of the middle schools, and that was Shepherdstown, and the principal there, this was already a couple years ago, said they were interested, but I didn't have like so. A lot of the work I did before, I was doing it with my wife. I should have her. I'll have her on my next meeting, I think. But she's helping me a lot.
And is that her picture in the background?
Yeah, it is. That's my wedding picture, 1982.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. So almost July 1st, our 42nd. So I was very active. We did have like a dozen college volunteers. Coming from like, especially Howard University, which is like a so-called HBCU, historically black college university. Not that that matters really, but anyway, and that was all good. But, you know, for longevity and to make it broader and more successful, obviously, my wife and I will continue to participate, but we need volunteers and community input, just like any nonprofit. And we'd like to, you know, have it broader. But yeah, I did talk to some middle schools. A couple said no, but the principal, at least one of those, has changed now, so needs to be reapproached. One said no, one said yes, probably, or they were interested, but we didn't offer yet. We don't have the like infrastructure. High schools, no response. That was during COVID. They didn't respond yet, but again, at least one of the two high schools has changed leadership. And what else we got? So I think we had like, what, four middle schools and two high schools? Yeah, now we have a charter school. I've never approached them yet. So I've had a little contact and there's some interest, but we don't have infrastructure yet to provide the services, if that makes sense.
You might be able to do better on your approach, which isn't bad, but To make it so that it doesn't sound at all religious.
Yeah. So like on this show here.
There are people out there that all you have to do is say the word religion and that's immediate turnoff.
When I go to talk to the principal or something, I'll just use our classroom materials. Yeah, like, I don't, like, for, like, a public discussion, for me, like, I think, got it. I mean, I got what you're saying. Yeah, so, no, we don't, you know, obviously, in our program, we don't preach that. But also, personally, I don't try to, like, completely separate it out. Like, I'm, like, if I, say I'm a teacher in a school, I know I'm not going to be teaching, you know, theology or sharing a particular scripture. But however, you know, yeah, I think society's gotten a little weird about that. But yeah, anyway, the short answer is yes, I understand that. And no, we don't go in and give the principal scriptures, you know. You know. But what, I know I'm not a bashful about talking about it. I mean, it's important for me, and I think it's important for you. So I don't want to exclude it from the overall discussion. But we don't talk about it.
I like scripture quotes tied to a particular topic. That is a good thing. I also like it when I can use founding fathers of Benjamin Franklin, Washington, Jefferson, Adams, Madison, Monroe, you know, the early strong men in our American society that make comments or have made comments that sounds almost like scripture, but it isn't.
Absolutely.
And I think it's pretty effective.
Well, what about, did you just say Lincoln? I think you did. Yeah. Lincoln, what about the Gettysburg Address and things like that that are on the Lincoln, wall of our nation?
Lincoln had a lot of stuff that he said, which is, you know, should be chiseled in stone, and in many cases it is. But there are other presidents who said some pretty interesting, noteworthy stuff. I'm a Teddy Roosevelt fan. I'd like one of my favorite underrated presidents is Calvin Coolidge. He hit the nail on the head so many times. And then, of course, Ronald Reagan made a really big impact on me in the 80s when he was president. And actually, before that time, I sort of was a fan of Ronald Reagan in the middle 70s when he was still being poo-pooed as a not-so-great governor, you know.
Right.
And he turned out to be... As you look back on things, he turned out to be a pretty doggone good governor and an excellent president, especially when you consider what he was dealing with, because he never had a House or a Senate that was Republican the whole time he was president. And he was able to deal effectively with the differing people. But then again, it's just the way I perceive things. There was not a heck of a lot of difference between a 1960s Richard Nixon and a 1960s John F. Kennedy, at least as far as their programs were concerned. Style and politics was different, but now style and politics is so different, and there is really a right wing and a left wing choice for people to make in even in every
that's
race.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's
but the bigger thing is like ground. More like, I think, because I have friends who are Democrats too, believe it or not.
Yeah,
but it is like is a thing that it's more like sort of like what we're talking about. Again, nobody's saying that you should preach a particular doctrine, but the point is like I went to an interesting display at the U.S. Capitol when I was still living in D.C., I forget the exact name of it. But what they're pointing out is, for instance, did you know that Thomas Jefferson went to church service in the U.S. Capitol? They used to hold church services in the Capitol. And Mr. Jefferson is often misconstrued as putting up the so-called wall between church and state, which is not at all, which was a particular letter to a congregation about a particular issue, which is often misconstrued. Anyway, he went to church in the U.S. Capitol. So he had no issue with worshiping God and in, you know, like that. It was just a particular instant. Anyway, what I'm saying is this whole thing of taking God out of everything is wrong. You're not supposed to establish religion. Like, I'm not supposed to say you must attend the Unification Faith. You must attend the Catholic Church. No.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up, because there are controversies even today that a non-denominational prayer before a meeting is a violation of church and state.
Completely wrong.
Wrong. Yeah. It's like, it's that educational thing. I had civics at, I think it, it started like in the seventh grade, and learning about government and the Constitution. And it's, the state is not supposed to have an official religion.
That's it.
Separation.
No one said.
Doesn't actually mean you can't pray in a meeting.
Right. And actually, saying there is no God is a religion, because your religion is basically secular humanism, or maybe you recognize some other entity other than God. By forcing people to saying you must not recognize God, that in itself is a type of religion.
Well, there's another religion. There's another religion out there that you haven't heard of, perhaps, which you should pay attention to. It's called Property Rights Are Supreme, and you can do whatever you want, and your neighbors don't have a say.
Yeah, and I think I know what you're getting at there.
Yeah, it's an absolute. And, I mean, I believe in property rights, but I don't think it's an absolute.
Yeah, I hear you.
There are many precepts out there that people spout, and when you try to dig down into to where are you going with this or where are you coming from, you find out it's kind of a religion. And it kind of shocks me, because people have said to me, no, absolutely not. Property values, you do whatever you want. And I was, what about your neighbors? Don't they have property values and property rights also? No. If I want to build something on my property, they can't stop me. And
yeah,
it's,
that's weird. It's kind of very self-centered.
It's very self-centered, and it's not and I don't want to say it's communal, but there's always a bigger picture to look at, and sometimes a smaller picture to look at. And in the regards to faith and values, I think it's smaller. It has to start at home. If it's not at home, the next best step to me is education. And you're not going to get a lot of that with a lot of the schools. My wife, before she passed away, she was a teacher, you know, she had teacher certificate, but she did a lot of substitute teaching, mostly in Virginia. And she would come home and kind of shake her head that, you know, she witnessed almost a daily massacre of the English language. And it went worse than that, that the kids weren't very, very well behaved. Mm-hmm. It was pretty stressful for her. She enjoyed teaching, but it was stressful for her to go through that routine. She did teach Catholic catechism down in Leesburg. She would never give up her allegiance to that parish down in Leesburg, St. John the Apostles.
Okay.
And she continued to teach catechism there. And I said, you know, they have a really good program up here in West Virginia. I ought to talk to some of them. But she was tied in. But anyway, the point I'm getting is that the values with teachers do make a reflection on the students. And it's a shame that we're not seeing that on a widespread. That 47% that you had on your chart of children being born out of wedlock in West Virginia.
Yeah.
That kind of is mind blowing to me. Let me ask you about that, because you probably are the expert. Is there a demographics breakdown inside of that? Is that higher educated, lower educated, higher income, lower income? What?
I'm sorry, I don't know. That's from this. CDC, Centers for Disease Control. I don't know. I mean, in D.C., well, this isn't D.C., I know, but there's clearly demographic indicators. For instance, in the black community, which isn't a majority in, like, West Virginia, obviously, but it's higher, like, really high, like 75%. But in but here we are in West Virginia, where it's mostly not, obviously, it's not mostly African-American. It's like 4% or something. And it's really high. So it's cutting across all over the place. Now, you know, anyway, I don't know. No, I'm sorry,
West,
I don't have
West Virginia is almost heaven. In my book, it's I'm not encouraging people to move here that don't have West Virginia values. But I would say that West Virginia is one of the last great places to move. And I think Jefferson County is a jewel in that crown.
It is a beautiful area.
It's not just beautiful, but people here are pretty much wonderful. There's always that 1-3% that you can't count on. But most of the people that I've met here in Jefferson County are just absolutely marvelous people. And that's from both sides of the coin. There are several people that are liberals that you can have a conversation with. If you can have a conversation, then I just don't kind of bother. But most of the people I've met here are wonderful, and I really love this county. So I'm sure you do, too.
Me, too. Yeah, trying to help. Well, I think we're coming to the conclusion. So I do really thank you for coming. Do send some people our way. Or if you're hearing this show and you say, hey, you know what? That's a pretty good idea. Well, give us a call. You can find us at visionroot.org or urbanlifetraining.org. Or, you know, we would love to have a talk with you and see how we can work together.
Well, thank you very much. I'm a Renaissance man. I can babble on almost any topic.
Yeah, we probably should conclude. So, but I do thank you for your time, and let's continue to work on this. Let's get the Urban Life program out. And, of course, it doesn't have to be Urban Life, but, of course, that's a really good one. Get that out into the schools and into the communities anywhere. And, we're looking for volunteers.
Don't be afraid to share it out there on social media. Social media can use a little morality.
Yeah. I'm not personally on Facebook, but people do. Do you feel free to share myself?
It's an eye-opener. It's a real eye-opener.
I was. I got off. But anyway, that's kind of another story. I mean, I'm on some of the social media. I'm on X or Twitter. I'm on Gab. I'm not super active. I'm on, I like Gab. I like, Twitter's okay. I have my own thing too. What do you call it? Friendica. But anyway, yeah, you can find me out there or at our website, like I said. So yeah, thanks for coming on. Yeah, really appreciate it. And
well,
until
thank
next,
you very much.
Yeah. And we'll see everyone next time. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye.